Welcome to Innovate and React. I'm your host, Kevin Harris, and today I'm here with Stefan Weber and Martin Bellhoff, who are the founders of ChemStars. And we will talk about how to overcome common hurdles for founders in the chemical space. Welcome, Stefan and Martin. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
You founded the startup network ChemStars, which is located in the west of Germany. What got you there to found this network, and what's your role in the startup ecosystem? Also, to start with, are you also a chemist, or what's your background?
Thank you very much, Kevin, first of all, for the invitation to join your podcast. My name is Stefan. I'm responsible for ChemStars. I'm lead ecosystem and communication and leading the initiative together with my colleague Martin. I do have a commercial background, so I'm not an expert on molecules, but I know how to set up effective connections, let's say. In my previous roles, I was working in the energy and logistics industry for E.ON and DHL, where I was an open innovation and always been on the intersection between corporate and startup world. So I kind of know both worlds and the friction between them, and I'll try my very best to reduce that friction, that startups and corporates collaborate more and bring more ideas and technologies into application. We are a team of 8 people, and our idea is to connect the startup ecosystem in the chemical space with the chemical industry, with investors, and also with the public sector. Mm-hmm. And as public-private partnership, we try to strengthen the chemical industry in Germany. And that's exactly why we're here in the first place, because we want to support the transformation of the chemical industry, sustainable, but also structural and also digital. And we do that by supporting startups and bringing innovations from the lab and from the research institutions to market.
Before we continue, Martin, what's your background?
I'm a biologist by training. I am lead strategy and ventures at ChemStars. I've been running this initiative with Stefan for the past 5 years. I came across startups in investment banking, so I did a bit of a detour from science into a very different world. I fell in love with the idea of people wanting to change the world based on something that they had developed in a lab. And I said, I want to change the world. So I joined a startup company first. Then I started my own business, ended up selling my shares to my co-founder. And before ChemStars, I was also consulting and later the CEO of a green biotech company.
So both of you have very diverse backgrounds, which is probably great for the startups and the perspective of all these different people. Let's go back to the chemical industry now and how you support startups in the chemical space. I think especially in the moment with the chemical industry struggling a bit with all these transformation that they have to go through, startups are really a way forward to bring innovation from all the universities that we have, especially also here in the west of Germany. There are a lot of universities and there's a lot of knowledge which could benefit for the chemical industry, but this connection sometimes is not that straightforward. So why, in your opinion, is now a good time for deep tech startups and chemistry startups?
Yeah, I mean, the chemical industry, as you already mentioned, is in a huge transformation process, and it has been for the past 5 to 10 years. And when you look at how innovation is done in general, you see that typically any sort of disruptive innovation, like big leaps, comes out of universities and ends up in the real world through startups. Whereas established organizations are typically better at so-called incremental innovation, which mm-hmm. means becoming more efficient at doing something that's similar, tweaking performance maybe a little bit, making products better, but not tenfold, yeah, but rather maybe 10% at a time. And startups are indeed the missing puzzle piece. Now we're at this point in time, as Stefan already mentioned, we're in a situation where we have a chemical industry that is still largely built on a fossil linear-based economy. And this model of making products seems to be becoming more difficult every day, which is not just because we have climate crisis that is sort of on the brink of happening already, but also on top of that, we see that with geopolitical tensions and disruptions that are happening or have been happening over the past couple of months, even more so than in the years before, supply chains are becoming more fragile. And we see that we're, as a nation, but also as a continent, heavily reliant on other regions and working supply chains, functional supply chains. So the reason why now is really that in order to become more independent, more industrially resilient, to be able to continue to manufacture the goods and deliver the services that we are all used to, we need to make sure that our chemical industry, which is sort of at the beginning of every industrial value chain, becomes independent of other regions and fossil resources. So we need to move towards circularity. We need to move towards climate neutrality. We also need to make sure that the products that end up in consumers' hands are safe and sustainable by design. And ultimately, with the digital transformation that's happening with AI, we need to make sure that our industry is really good at making use of those techniques to still be relevant and competitive in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
If I may add, I mean, as you know, chemistry is part of everything. Over 95-96% of all manufactured goods are based on industrial chemical processes or use chemical products in the making. But I would also go a little bit beyond the chemical industry here, because chemical startups also make key contributions to industrial transformation in other sectors as they develop new materials that can be used, recycling processes, new sustainable production methods. And that's has also an impact in other sectors such as energy, mobility, pharmaceutical, agriculture. Marty mentioned circular economy. So supporting startups in the chemical industry and having a prospering startup ecosystem in the chemical industry means that we strengthen the resilience of the chemical industry, but also of other industries that we do have here in Germany and in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this resilience point really has a high impact, especially lately when there's so much disruption in the whole supply chain. And the chemical industry really is, as you also mentioned, in the base of most value chains, because I think there's no product in our hands that we can use without the chemical industry at some point, even if it's food, fertilizer, also ammonia. Like, a lot of that also comes from these not so stable parts of the world. And this impacts then our everyday lives in all kinds of aspects. So especially this status quo, I would say, has to be challenged. And I think all these big chemistry companies, in their own interest, they might not try to take big risks and change their complete structure in one go. So that's where I think also startups can take risks, because they don't have all this weight attached to them, I would say. Like, they can start from a clean slate, try new things. And this is really an advantage, although they might not have these deep pockets as the big chemistry companies.
It's very true. But at the same time, chemical companies are innovative. It's just a different type of innovation that's in focus, so to speak. And I do see, or at Chemstars, we do see huge potential, because there's a ton of incredibly smart scientists in academia who work on new technologies or new ideas, and it's really up to them to bring them to market and to create the change that they would love to see in the real world that's based on their science. So we're really at a point in time where we have incredible science, we have a demand within the chemical industry for new processes, for new ideas, new technologies. And startups are really the puzzle piece in the center.
And one of the activities that we have at Chemstars, for instance, is our idea competition From Lab to Market Challenge, where we really go very early into the universities and research institutions and try to help scientists to figure out if A, they are the right persons to be an entrepreneur, to take technology to market, and B, if the technology has commercial potential. And that works quite well and also helps to get the creativity that we do also have in the academic sector, beside the technologies and the scientists, to market. And that's very important from our point of view. And as we see from the past years, we've been kind of successful with the idea competition because we see a lot of startup projects coming out of it. We see the first companies that are legally incorporated. We see money flowing into also these very, very early stage projects. So it's, from our point of view, going into the right direction.
Yeah, definitely. That's good where this network thought comes into play to connect those people who have the ideas with the people who are in need of those ideas. Do you think that here in Germany we have a lot of innovation, but from other discussions I had, it's like in other countries, like in the Americas, they are more prone to do this entrepreneurial way and bring their research also into markets. Is this still the case here in Germany, or did we catch up?
I mean, we see this changing, right? So more and more scientists are looking into bringing their research into the real world, and I think it's a good thing. Whenever we compare ourselves to the US, I think it's important to keep in mind that there's a very different culture where entrepreneurship is much more celebrated than it is over here. No. There's a lot more capital flowing around. There are many more success stories. And there are other labor protection laws as well. So the German chemical industry, as I sometimes like to say, has made very few people poor. So a lot of people who studied chemistry or got their PhD in chemistry, for example, who ended up in big organizations in the chemical industry, but also in SME, in small, medium enterprises, they earned a good living for a very long time. They were able to afford a house, maybe two or three cars, were able to go on holidays regularly. And this is, for many people, something that they want to achieve in their life. And I do understand that people do want this. At the same time, in the US, you can basically lose your job every day, whereas over here, you can't, right? So there are a lot of differences. And I wouldn't say one is better than the other. It's just different. And we still believe, however, that it's important to make something else of your science or out of your science than a nice publication. So if you get into chemistry or biology at university, you do it because you're curious, because you're excited about science, about technology, and so on. And I think that many people, by default, want to see their science out in the real world. It's just many people do not know how to. Do not know that it's possible even. They don't know how to finance it, but there are investors who are actually looking for smart people with great ideas. And there is a way now to do this if you want to change the world yourself and not wait for somebody else to do it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's, I think, I don't know if it's like changed that much or if I just got aware of this because now I'm more looking into this space because of the podcast. But in my studies, I never really had many like contact points with these startup networks. And I didn't even know that this was such a good possibility. And I think now there are more of these networks and also more at the universities, more support for bringing your research to the market.
Comparing it to 5 years ago when we started with ChemStars, a lot has happened. The ecosystem has really evolved in a very good way, but there's still a lot to do and there's still a lot of potential that we did not tap into, if I may frame it like this. And what we also see is, I mean, we're oftentimes talking about or talking to scientists if they want to start their own business based on their technology. But there are also other ways if you would like to engage in a startup if you are a scientist. So, for instance, when we are at universities and research institutions talking about the topic, what we experience in the last months is that more and more scientists are really interested in also job opportunities within startups, because also when you do your PhD, you also get the news that chemical companies are laying off people, that there are not so many opportunities anymore. And we do have a job board on our website where we at any time have at least 120 jobs within the startups that we have worked with that are looking for qualified people in technical roles, but also business roles. And this is, from my point of view, also a fantastic way to work for smaller companies that are making an impact. And yeah, you don't always have to found a startup yourself to work in a startup environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is also, I think, in such small companies, it's, if you want to, it's easier to be very connected to the research. I don't know, in big companies, then when you become a lab leader or something, then you're very quickly in these, basically a management role, but it's difficult to stay close to research. But in startups, I think that's still very much possible.
There are different roles in the established industry, but also in the, working for startups. And it's really important that if you as a person know what you're looking for, and then there will be opportunities.
Yeah. And you mentioned that we have a lot of great ideas in universities, in research institutes even. What or why do these ideas currently not go to the market as much as they could, as you mentioned the untapped potential?
Yeah, I'd probably say there's three different challenges, depending on where you are at what point in time you are looking at the entire startup journey. So we do see that many scientists as of today are not aware of the fact that they could potentially start a company. Right. And if they're not aware of it, how can they do it? Right. Plus, they're not being educated in how to do it either. So if you don't know you can do it and you don't know how to do it, like, what's the probability of you bringing your research to market? So this is kind of the first challenge that we need to overcome. We need to inspire more scientists to become entrepreneurs. And the second one is that the chemical industry as it is highly complex. It's regulated. It's very difficult often to navigate for outsiders. And even if you have a PhD in chemistry or in chemical engineering, you still don't understand the chemical industry and the way it works, right? So what we need, or what founders need in the very beginning, is a lot of industry specific know-how. They need to understand, who is my customer? Like, what type of problem do they have? How big is it? How expensive is it? I've developed a catalyst or a process. Like, what's my business model? Am I selling ultimately a catalyst? Am I selling a process? Am I going to develop processes for somebody else? What am I ultimately selling? And to answer these questions, on top of how will I scale the technology, how will I navigate the regulatory framework that I'm active in, there are so many questions you need to answer, where you need access to people who understand this space, this industry, and who have experience. And I think that this is not easy, or has historically not been easy to get. So this type of expertise, the answers to these questions, which is one of the things that we try to help with, right? So when we work with startups or founders, what we do is we offer them network and know-how. It's really, really that simple. So they can make better decisions faster, to make progress faster ultimately. And the third sort of difficulty as to why still very few ideas or technologies end up creating impact in the real world is that if you bring something from lab to market, this takes a lot of time and money. And often enough, we see that it can be difficult to finance the technical scale-up
of processes, of new ideas and technologies. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the biggest hurdles as of today. There's a lot of people working on it, of trying to find solutions. And there's always been, and there still is, a lot of capital for good teams with great mm-hmm. ideas. But it's really that. So how do we enable people to make the step out of university labs is kind of the first. How do we then help them get access to the right know-how and network that they need to make good decisions, to build solid investment cases that can be financed? And ultimately, how do we finance the scale-up from, let's say, a mini plant all the way through demo to industrial scale facility? And it's getting better. Right. So we do see that there's much more know-how than 5 years ago. We see there's much more appetite to start companies, much more interest in starting companies than there was 5 years ago. We do see a lot of people working on overcoming this scale-up financing gap and so on. So looking ahead, there's a lot of sort of traffic lights turning from red to yellowish and maybe even green. Mm-hmm. But still, it's if you ask about why is it the way it is today, then these are probably the three biggest challenges or reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that are important points. And I think for chemical startups, in comparison to maybe software startups or something like that, the investment costs are much higher, and that's a bit more of a hurdle. And I think also in the mind of a PhD student who has thought of maybe I want to build a startup, but how in the world would I get millions to build a chemical plant? That's never going to work. And then they might just ditch the idea and continue their normal industry pathway and go for career in that way. How can researchers get this funding?
I mean, the good thing is that you're not from the start have to raise 20 million to develop something, but you can do baby steps. And I think the first step is really, if you are interested in pursuing that direction, that you educate yourself, that you go, that you have a look locally, who are the partners that have some offers, either at my research institute, university, or maybe something external. That you go on events, that you meet people, that you build up your network, and then also find co-founders, because starting a company is very, very tough, and it's not a job that you would be able to do on your own, so you need a team. Ideally, if you bring the technical expertise, you also have at least someone on your team who also has a business perspective. And then if you have a team of four people, for example, and if you are still at the university or a research institution, our recommendation most of the times is exist transfer of research. Mm-hmm. In German, exist Forschungstransfer, because that's, from our point of view, the best program that we do have here in Germany. And it's a very unique program also compared to other countries in Europe. So we did not see something comparable in other countries. And if a team is granted exist transfer of research, they have the opportunity to stay at the university or research institution. They are still employed there. They get 2 years, 1.5 to 2 years time to develop their technology and their startup project to a stage in which they are confident that they can become successful and that they can spin it out afterwards. They get a budget of around, I would say on average, Martin, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe a million, a bit more than a million, but we also have seen bigger projects for exist. And you basically don't have any risk associated with this. So exist transfer of research is 100% equity free. And if it doesn't work, you have not betted your home, you're not bankrupt, but you can still go into industry or pursue another career. But if it works, it's a fantastic starting point to then also start talking to potential investors that can then see, okay, the technology has been developed during the past 1.5 to 2 years. The team has developed their first potential customer that have interest in the solution that is provided. And this is basically a de-risking for the investors and also for the founding team to be sure, okay, we want to go that way. We want to invest more time and money into that project. and we really want to start a company.
And what's the best way to get this exist transfer of research?
Yeah, I mean, what you need is you need to have the university or research institution that is, how to say, applying or sending in the exist transfer of research application, just from a formal or organizatory perspective. And then it's obviously good if you have already contacts, like, for example, to us as ChemStars, or, I mean, you talked already to our friends from GreenChem in Berlin as well, that you look for people that are able to help you really write a good proposal that are able to potentially make the first contacts to potential industry partners. Because if you have LOIs, so letters of intent, for example, of industry partners saying we are interested in that project, this drastically raises the likelihood of the grant to be granted, because then also the reviewers see, okay, there's interest from the industry. And we are here to help. So we have supported, Martin, correct me if I'm wrong, 11 or 12 exist transfer of research application. And except of one, I think all of them went through. So the quota that we do have is quite good up to now. And yeah, if anyone out there is looking to hand in exist transfer of research, let us know. We're happy to support. But please keep in mind that you reach out not 3 days prior before you want to hand this in, but that you plan enough time to also have feedback loops in there and also build relationships with, for example, industry partners that might be interested in, and not just ask for LOIs to someone that you have never met before, because that's not worth anything.
Yeah, so you can help with your network to connect those future startups with the industry partners to already kind of validate this idea and see if this has potential. And with letter of intents and support from bigger institutions, it's more likely for this proposal to be accepted, right?
Yeah,
that's true. And maybe one thing to keep in mind, and Stefan touched upon this, for your exist application, just as much as for future investors, but also for you yourself as a founder, it's important to make sure that somebody really wants your product, right? And the biggest fear that reviewers for public funding, but also in this sense, public funding exists, but also investors have, is that techies build something that they find incredibly exciting, but nobody wants to pay money for. So it's really about proving to the outside world, be it a reviewer or be it an investor, that somebody cares. This is one of the most important tasks you have as a founder. And on top of that, you need to also prove that this makes sense economically. So you make more money by selling than you spend on making your product. It's that simple, right? And you need to prove that it can scale technically and that it can work technically. It's really those three things. Does anyone care? Will it make sense financially? And is it scalable and ultimately also defendable against competition in the future?
Do you think it's more difficult for chemistry startups to explain this and how it's relevant than, for example, for a material science startup, when they actually have a product which is very close to the end user compared to something that is at the very base of the value chain where no one can really grab it?
Yeah, I think you've touched upon a very important point. It's very true, yes. The closer to a consumer, the easier to explain. And we do see, and this kind of goes back to what I said earlier in relation to the complexity of the chemical industry, the fact that it is not very easy to navigate for outsiders. Even in the venture capital ecosystem, in the investors ecosystem, there is, I'm trying to say this nicely, there is maybe not enough chemistry or chemical industry know-how yet. So it can be very difficult for investors to understand the product and the importance of this product in an industrial value chain, for example. Let's say you make carbon monoxide from carbon dioxide, right? Very few investors understand the carbon monoxide market. But if you if you make sustainable aviation fuels out of it, if you make methanol out of it, all of a sudden it's a different story. Yep. So it really depends on the case. And also, it's probably more difficult to explain polyols to someone than it is to sell insulation materials. Mm-hmm. If you think about polyurethanes, for example. So yes, it is a bit more difficult. However, there are more and more investors who do understand the importance and the potential that lies in these chemistry startups and in the products that they make. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially with this resilience that we talked about in the beginning, is when we can build the value chain from recycled material or material that we grow here, like all these power to X processes, for example. That is also then a completely new value perspective that maybe doesn't really exist that much in the current petrochemical way.
Yep.
And from your network, can you maybe bring an example from how this, from proof of concept to production scale up, has worked?
So, I mean, we've been around 5 years, and in chemistry startup world, 5 years is sort of half time, right? So it typically takes about 10 to maybe even 12 years to bring research or your idea from the lab to industrial scale. Mm-hmm. So we do not, as of today, have a team or a startup that has ended up in industrial scale. We do, however, see a bunch of startups on their way. One example is Eden. They work on recycling of textiles. They're now building a demo facility in Münster. They came out of the lab with the process to ultimately recycle shirts and jeans, like old textiles, but also industrial textiles. Mm-hmm. And we see many other teams who are going into a similar direction. So recycling is a huge topic. Another startup that we love is Cyclize. They make syngas mm-hmm. from carbon dioxide and from waste plastics. Mm-hmm. And so they are at the very beginning of the value chain. And they're in the process of now planning the next step from mini pilot to demo and so on and so on. So many startups are on their way, but it takes a lot of time to ultimately get to market and industrial scale. We do work with digital startups as well, and with other startups where it may be a little bit easier to get to sort of industrial application. Another example from our portfolio is Ironcraft. They have developed a coating technology that allows you to replace multi-layer materials with a monolayer and a very thin coating.
Interesting.
So you typically, when you package chemicals, for example, but also other products, you have multi-layer packaging to protect the product in the inside and make sure that none of your product migrates through your packaging, because you do want to avoid this at any cost. So historically, different polymers have been glued together, but it's very, very difficult to recycle these multi-layer systems. Now, what Ironcraft does is that they apply a very thin coating to a monomaterial, which can be just a standard polyolefin. And this creates the physical barrier that you would then get through a multi-layer system. But at the same time, the coated monomaterial is easily recyclable mechanically. So in that sense, they are making packaging recyclable that historically hasn't been recyclable. And they are already at the stage where they are selling their machines, so somebody can ultimately make packaging with their coating.
So also solving multiple problems at the same time, like the cyclability of packaging material, while also reducing the complexity, which makes it probably also easier for the applying companies to produce their product. And then, save also money, I guess.
I cannot comment.
Do you have some tips now for if someone is interested at the university or research institute and thinking about maybe my research might have the potential to go to a startup? How can they first start this evaluation process and basically get the proof of that their idea is actually worth trying to pursue in a startup?
I think the first and most important step is get out of the lab and start talking to people which are not your direct coworkers and are also in love with the technology, but really try to find the people that might be your potential customers, users that might have an interest, and tell them about it. You don't have to explain how the technology works in detail, but give them a brief idea of what you want to do and get feedback. Mm-hmm. Because that feedback will ultimately help you to come to an educated decision. Is it worthwhile pursuing or not? And you will also get feedback or contacts, let's say, whom else you should talk. And from that, you can work your way forward. But like I said, really important to leave the environment where you're in, talk to people, and also feel free to approach us as Chemstars very early on. And we are always up for a chat to see if we can help, or if we know someone else who might help. Like I said, our idea competition, the From Lab to Market Challenge, is always a good tool to test things like this out. The submission deadline now is until the 30th of March this year. But yeah, we are running this every year, and also independent from the idea competition, happy to support and also to pinpoint to other organizations. Like, for example, if you are in Berlin, definitely talk to Green Chem. If you are in Munich, have a look at ChemSpace. And if you are at the RWTH Aachen, you can talk to Koala or Quincut. So there are organizations that are there to support in very, very early stages that do fantastic work. And yeah, full stop.
Yeah, we'll definitely link all these informations in the show notes for you if you're interested in connecting Chemstars, and just talk to them if you think your idea might be worth pursuing. And one other point that I would be interested in is, what role does storytelling play in this starting a startup and convincing people? Because in natural sciences, that's not necessarily one of the main topics.
It is incredibly important as a founder, but I believe even as a scientist and stays in academia, it's important to be able to explain to an outsider or to somebody else, a third party, what it is you do, so that person understands it independent of their technical background. Mm-hmm. So if you leave academia and go into industry, this is important. If you start a company, this is important. And I, maybe much like you yourself, believe it's also important if you stay in academia. And yes, we work with a lot of startups on the way they pitch and present their ideas. There is a certain structure that has evolved in the startup ecosystem, where you typically start with the problem that you're trying to solve, then go on with the solution, and then you kind of dig deeper as to why this solution is better and how it works and why it works better than other solutions out there. But maybe one of the things that I can share that are really, really important is that when you define the problem that you're trying to solve, don't just think about like a societal problem. Let's say, for example, you work on a recycling project or a recycling technology. Don't just say there's a huge amount of waste plastic that needs to be taken care of, but also always think about, who's my customer? Who am I selling to? And what is their specific problem?
And perspective.
It's not just about the societal problem, but it's about your customer's problem, which is very important to keep in mind.
Yeah, definitely. To get yourself in the perspective of the customer and then think of what their problems are and what their feelings are with these kind of problems, and then give them a solution that they can understand.
Yeah. And one of the things I've noticed is that if you find a way to excite people enough about the problem, it's not that your solution doesn't matter, but it's much easier to then get somebody else excited about your solution as well. So make people care about what it is you do, and they are much more likely to then engage with you and try to help you.
Yeah,
and also try to think of whom is on the other side of the table. Whom do you talk to? Is that someone who has a technical background? Is that someone who has a commercial background? And also adjust the story that you tell according to the recipient of the story. because as I do not have a technical background, for example, the teams can tell me about their amazing new molecules. I will never get it. And there's also what Martin mentioned about IronCraft, for example. That's something that even I, with no technical background, can easily understand because that's something I can feel and touch. But yeah, what's really important is make the complex tech that you're working on easy to understand for me or even your grandmother, grandfather, that they understand what you're working on and that they are excited. Yeah.
I imagine that especially in those pitches, which are usually not that long, it's really important to know who your audience is and then tailor whatever you're saying to what you think their perspective is. And then you can target them differently than, for example, when you talk to some other tech people who really want to know every detail about the process, and differently to when you talk to economists who just cares about how the numbers in terms of money are. And that's very important for these very short pitches, I think.
Yeah. And don't worry about appearing not as smart as you really are. I sometimes feel that scientists like complexity because it portrays some sort of intelligence. Yeah. But I believe that it may even be the other way around. So if you're able to simplify mm-hmm. things without getting off track and without leaving important parts out, that's a much better yeah. approach.
Yeah, the most important part is to get the key points over in the most precise and short manner yeah. as possible.
Exactly.
Are there anything that we have not talked about in this discussion yet that you would like to address?
What I would like to mention is that, and I mentioned our idea competitions a few times. So we do have an award event at this idea competition, which is a public event where we expect around 150 guests in Leverkusen. And everyone who is interested in entrepreneurship and startups in the chemical space, feel free to register for this event and join us. Registration is not yet possible, but you will find, if you follow us on LinkedIn or on our website, you will pretty soon find the opportunity to register. And yeah, I would be happy to get in touch with a few of your listeners and talk how we can support or answer questions. And yeah, feel free to approach us at any time.
Yeah, thank you for that point. That's always a good place for if you have a contact point. Also in person, I think, is a different way of just doing all these online meetings. Thank you very much for telling me about how to overcome these hurdles of startups, and hopefully we inspired some people to start their own. And feel free to contact Chemstars. And thank you, Martin and Stefan, for joining me.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
If you got interested now in startups, check out the links in the show notes to Chemstars and feel free to contact them. Don't forget to follow on wherever you're listening. This really helps the show and me to get new guests on to continue. Contact me if you want to talk about your research or your startup in the chemical space. Just send me an email to contact@innovateandreact.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, keep innovating and stay curious.